When Michael Chabon was researching his latest book, Telegraph Avenue, he didn't have to go very far from his East Bay neighborhood. The story is set in a record shop, and there were several within walking distance of his Rock Ridge home. One of them belonged to Berrigan Taylor.
He came in on evidently a fairly regular basis. He didn't speak up much. I honestly didn't remember him from his name. And when I started hearing him interviewed, I started to recognize the voice. I'm very sound-oriented.
Berry Taylor doesn't own that shop anymore, but he's still one of the most knowledgeable collectors of jazz records in the Bay Area. So what does it take to be a great collector? To have an encyclopedic knowledge of music? To spend a lifetime immersed in a passion led by your ears? Berry Taylor told KALW's Ben Trefney it all began with one album.
It was called A Handful of Modern Jazz. It got a 5-star review. It was 99 cents. It was on a budget label. You still see them around, even now. And they really were a handful of modern stars. It was Dizzy and Miles and Charlie Parker, and they were all playing bebop, you know. And 99 cents, but the nice thing about it was that there was a review, gave it 5 stars. And if you look at the album cover, they have just a list of all the people who were on it without a breakdown. And in the Downbeat review, they actually listed all of the tracks with who was on each track. And I cut that out and pasted it on the back. And then I started doing something that I have done in my entire life and I've advised other people to do. I tried systematically to get a record that had everybody who was on that album. I tried to get a whole album with them on it. So I made a list of everybody who was on it, and then I would look up in Downbeat, you know, if anything came out like Dizzy or Miles, and I would get the record that got the greatest review. And then I'd buy that record, and then I'd look at that personnel, and I'd see who was on that record, and then I'd go out and try to find the best record that had those people on it. And that's how you build a record collection. When I hear John Coltrane doing Russian Lullaby, it sends me back to my parents' basement where I was just introduced to what was called then sheets of sound. I'd just moved to a small town outside of Dayton, and I didn't really know anyone, and I went to a small high school. And so I kind of delved into my dad's record collection, much like a child would delve into their mother's garden or into, you know, trying to build a treehouse when they're lonely or, you know, whatever. And I didn't understand what sheets of sound was. I kept reading about it. They kept referring to it in Downbeat magazine. And I didn't understand what sheets of sound was because I didn't know that my dad had any records that were sheets of sound. And so he brought me a Metronome magazine, and it discussed the music of John Coltrane. And he kind of invented what was later called sheets of sound, which is basically tons of 16th and 32nd notes played in such a trippy manner that it actually sounds like the rippling of an instrument. Russian Lullaby, he barrels through that thing. And I'd never heard anything like it. And it gave me goosebumps then, and it's giving me goosebumps as I sit here right now. One day, a friend of mine, Richard Brown, who used to run the record department at Moe's Books in Berkeley, he came to me because I used to sell records for him to Moe's, promo copies, things like that, things I'd pick up at flea markets. And I used to sell things to him. And I don't know, we kind of were friends. And he came to me one day and he said, "Hey, do you want to open a record store together?" And we bought, thanks to Moe Moskowitz, he sold us his record collection at Moe's and they just pulled, we pulled everything out. We got the bins, we got the records, we got the price markers, we got everything. And Richard and I opened up on Piedmont Avenue as Berrigan and Brown. And if I may say, that was a fairly successful retail operation. We had everything from opera, classical, international, and of course about 25% of the stock was jazz. We had that store for several years, and we were successful. We had employees, and lots of people came in, and we were kind of a community center, just a place like a barber shop or a bar or a someplace like that, where people were allowed to sit around and bullshit, I mean, talk. I was one of my best customers. I feel very blessed that I've been able to arrange my life to be basically have a soundtrack going at almost all times of my choice, of my choosing. I had a good friend and employee manager, his name is David Jordan, and that he really turned me on to an area of jazz, soul jazz as it's called now. At the time, I'm not sure what it was. It was, I guess, blues oriented. Not that most jazz isn't from that period. But Eddie Lockjaw Davis, Shirley Scott, even though this was influential to me because of Big Dave's predilection for that kind of music, it did not turn out to be music, even though I like it, it did not turn out to be music that I played 35 or 40 times over and over again. I was really into studying the music of Charles Mingus. This was in the late 70s and early 80s, and he was still alive, and he was in his final really burst of the ability to create new material. I mean, sure, everyone knows the stuff from the 57, 58, 59, but he had a group that he had some great stuff, and this was Mingus Changes 1 and 2 and Mingus Moves, and the compositions are fantastic. In fact, that is something that I still, those Mingus 1 and 2 are things that I still to this day, Duke Ellington's Sound of Love, Tis Free Cell Block F, Tis Nazi USA, these are things that just still grab me. My recent survey that I'm doing right now on a personal basis is the music of Thelonious Monk done by other musicians. I don't think there's one Monk tune that would not be considered a jazz standard at this point in time. And there are a lot of ways to play Thelonious Monk. When I listen to stuff, I really listen to stuff. I'm one of the few people I've ever met that when I hear something, I play it like 10 times in a row, over and over and over and over again. Or as soon as I get in the car, I take it with me and I listen to it on the way somewhere. And then when I get home, I stick it in the computer and I listen to it on the computer. Right? I mean, because when I like it, I really like it.